Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 17th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Mac Meltzer, the CEO of Strive Gaming, a company that offers end-to-end services as a platform provider for iGaming, on his leadership of the company after 1 year. This month, IGT is introducing the Diamond RS gaming machine, mixing iconic slots and evolved game variations designed to exceed expectations. Discover your next legend at igt.com/diamondrs. The competition of companies providing platform services for iGaming and online sports betting operators has always been fierce. As the chief commercial officer for Kambi, which is arguably the leader in that space, Mac Meltzer learned all he could about the U.S. market and how to penetrate it. 1 year ago, he was named CEO of Strive Gaming, another European platform provider that has something special, according to Meltzer. The company offers superior player management while being able to satisfy all the regulatory and compliance aspects of online gaming and delivering unique and innovative content. He spoke with me from the Strive Gaming Vancouver offices in August. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. My guest today is Mac Meltzer, the CEO of Strive Gaming. Max, great to see you. We haven't talked since you were with Kambi, but I'm looking forward to catching up with you.
Hey, Roger, thanks so much. I loved it that time when we did it at ICE at Kambi. Right. So I'm looking forward to this one now with Strive Gaming, me calling from Vancouver in our office.
Absolutely. Here. So it's been about a year since you took over at Strive. Can you tell us, you know, how you found the company when you got there and the changes you've done during that time?
Yeah, you're right. It's coming up to basically the anniversary now of my joining Strive Gaming and being part of the shareholding group here running Strive Gaming. Obviously, it was a very different challenge and task to my previous role. But, you know, I think where it sort of stemmed from was because, you know, typically we were doing deals involving platforms and often we would bring them into deals in that particular role that I had. Sure. And I think it gave me a very clear indication of what was required to be a successful platform in North America. And I think since joining, really, it's been about signing new customers, serving them well by getting them up live quickly and giving them operator effectiveness and efficiencies that they would expect to have from a leading platform, and then basically building out, continually hiring as people might see at the moment, so that we can fulfill uptaking more customers on board and building new features and innovating in our space, whether that's data, employees, data and AI, or whether it is our native apps, or whether it is our managed services team. Basically, it's about hiring these people, but making them effective and trying to make a cohesive organization across multiple countries. So it's been quite a task, but one I've really enjoyed.
Can you give us a little history of Strive, even before you got there, you know, where it started, how what kind of businesses you've been in?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I have a sort of an entrepreneurial background anyway. I was Kambi for 5 years as the chief commercial officer, but prior to that, I'd also been involved as a running a sports agency.
Okay.
Back in the UK, where I was a soccer agent and a cricket agent, and I actually helped build that business into a very successful one before I left, and then went on a much wilder tour into the iGaming space, which I actually have to say I much more enjoy than the sports industry, despite being a big sports fan, and even from my feet supporting soccer teams like Crystal Palace or the Bills. NFL. For me, it's really, the journey has always been that, you know, this sort of entrepreneurial spirit, the experience that I was receiving in the iGaming space, the kind of decisions that I had to take whilst I was at my previous company, led me to think that there is really just the competitive landscape for platform was quite ripe. You know, when I analyzed the marketplace, you can see a lot of the technology stacks that serve as platforms have very old technologies. You'd know that a lot of the platforms that actually have been successful in the past few years, really because they were there before PASPA was repealed, which means actually they were kind of designed not for today's expectations. They were designed for a pre-PASPA experience where you were doing social casino or, you know, that kind of thing. So we knew that there was going to have to be, as we know, like a potential of 50 states or 50 countries. That's maybe not everything's going to regulate, but let's imagine that over the long term, you're going to need to be able to quickly adapt to regulations. You're going to need to be able to be very conscious of the wire, everything that everyone's aware of. But it needed to be done that you had an easily deployable, quick to deploy, easily adaptable, easy to integrate a content platform that would be successful. And actually, realistically, there just weren't that many out there. So, and don't get me wrong, it's not an easy role being in the platform space, but it is the fundamentals, it's the foundations that you can't do anything smoothly or correctly if you don't have the right foundations in place. It's like just your own home. So we just tried to create something that would be very, very operator effective. And I think what you'll see in our business, and it's very different from a lot of platform businesses, we brought operators in, you know, people that work for Rush Street, Churchill Downs, and Bally's Interactive. You know, the people that are designing, developing this platform are actually being operators themselves in the North America space. So that's a bit about what the journey that we've come from and where we've been headed.
Okay. So, you know, there's quite a few platform providers in the North American space right now, one of them being your previous employer. How are you going to catch up to them and actually overtake them at some point?
Well, I have to be clear, of course, naturally, that there is a very different, big difference between being a platform and being a sportsbook platform.
Okay.
So I'd say that, you know, we're never going to get into the space of being a sportsbook.
Okay.
You know, the likes of what Canby did and do and the likes of other organizations that are out there, you know, because we're integrated with Canby, we're integrated with Betson, we're integrated with the DraftKings, SB Tech, and we're going to start integrating other sportsbooks. We're already nearly done with a couple, but we will announce them soon. We aren't looking to get into the sportsbook space. We're just trying to make sure that the way that you interact, where we can pluck in content through into the platform, is of the highest level. That basically we have the tools. For example, we have the Infinity engine, which is a rules-based engine that really, we call it Infinity because it really is quite limitless in what you can configure, the configurations that you can have to drive automation and real-time engagement with customers.
Right.
So that's like, you could basically set it up for any way that you want to segment your customers, any way of flows of customers. You can put them into buckets of how you want to treat them. It's a great way of being able to trigger the system if you feel that there's any responsible gaming concerns. That, you know, you could even use it to alert a customer service agent immediately to contact a player.
Okay.
So it's incredibly powerful. It's a tool that I think any of our current operators are stating that they feel it's like what probably the most powerful engine they've ever used, and they've worked for some of these big operators. We realistically have a multi-tenanted modular platform, which means that we can deploy very quickly. We can break things up quite easily. In microservices, we have this, and also, you know, we've got the native apps and we have the customer services. So it makes it, you know, for us to compete with the other platform businesses that are out there, we are quite effective in doing so because we actually deliver on what we say that we're gonna do.
Okay.
And I think there's a lot of businesses out there that just they don't have, but we don't have tech debt like a lot of these businesses do. You know,
right.
We can. Someone says to us that we really want to integrate these casino games. We're gonna get that done in a few weeks' time.
Yeah.
You know, because we have that ability to do so, and the platform's set up for that. And that's really a powerful thing because, you know, if you choose the wrong platform, you really can't make the right strategic decisions that you want to have. You really can't actually engage with your end user in the way that you want to. And then it doesn't really matter how good your content is. To be honest, it doesn't even matter how good your sportsbook is or your casino content is, if the platform is not effective at communicating with your customers and and knows how to take people through the KYC waterfalls,
sure,
and right, payment methodologies. And obviously every state and every province has different regulations about what payment providers or those who can't get licensed. And we just have to adapt very, very quickly to that. And, you know, that's why the reasons are like the likes of Thomas Winter is a very well-known player in the casino space in iCasino, chose us for Golden Nugget to be in the likes of Ontario, which is obviously a highly competitive,
sure,
environment.
Right.
And that's why people choose us and we continue to compete.
Okay. So customer acquisition costs are the biggest expense for operators. How can Strive help to reduce those costs?
For sure. I mean, that is the biggest problem, right?
Right.
I mean, and I think we are seeing now a switch in mentality in the industry to looking at player retention. And for that means, you know, for us, we have an incredible platform set up for that. You know, we even have a data team, an AI team that are focused purely on tracking LTVs and potential churn and alerting the business to our operators about what to do. But our platform in general, because of the rules engine, because of the way that we interact with, first of all, like, it's really important that you have a really good setup with getting people through the KYCs, the waterfall. That's very easy for us to adjust. It's really important that you have the right payment methods in place. You need to have a really good flows experience like we're able to provide. We have the rules engine is the best way of really engaging for customers about, doesn't necessarily just need to be about bonuses. It could be,
sure,
about the way that what you want them to do or access based on what they're utilizing on the platform. And ultimately, you know, the stabilization of a platform is incredibly important.
Right. Like
you,
sure.
How many times have you heard the companies going down during Super Bowl and,
right,
and the like? So uptime, making sure that people can actually just simply get on, place a bet, be effective, utilize any, get onto any content that they want, make sure they don't have any issues with KYC or payments.
Sure.
And then feel really engaged from an operator effectiveness level, like we're able to provide, is super important. So we like to believe that we are a platform that is probably the leading one in terms of player retention.
Okay. Yeah, player retention is obviously critical. You know, it costs a lot to obtain a player, but to keep a player is even more important.
It is. What is even the point if you're just getting them through the door, to be
right,
quite honest? You know,
right,
that's not where you're going to find your long-term growth.
Okay.
IGT's Diamond RS mechanical gaming machine is a cut above the rest, elevating classic play with research-driven design. Honoring iconic slot history with a bigger and bolder design, the Diamond RS cabinet delivers appealing retro styling, modern features, large top box, and an extended content support package featuring top-performing classic games with bundling capabilities. Steeped in market-focused research and fueled by passion and collaboration, the Diamond RS is real gaming for real players. Discover your next legend at igt.com/DiamondRS. And now back to our podcast.
So when it comes to content, do you use all the regular content providers, the IGTs, the you know, Light and Wonders of the world, that kind of thing, when it comes to the games, and do you also use, when it comes to payments, do you use all the payment providers that are out there?
So if in the casino side, if you're going to be competitive, you're going to have a massive amount of
right
content, and you know, we're integrated with everyone you would expect, the IGTs, Light and Wonder, Evolutions, mm-hmm, Everys,
right,
Playtex, all the casino content that we want, but also we do it at a deep integration level. So like with as much as is possible, of course, depending around if people, you know, certain agreements are already in place, like we have with some of our operators. But in general, we try to take content and do it to the deepest level. So that goes for Sportsbook as well. When we do an integration with Sportsbook, we don't just do like a top layer or a several there. We try to take almost all the APIs,
yeah,
that are available in each Sportsbook,
mm-hmm,
so that, because that will create the closest possibilities to utilize the content within the platform, and that's better for operator effectiveness. You don't want them to be doing something on the platform, then they have to switch out,
sure,
and use other Sportsbook backgrounds or CMSs on casino, etc. So us is about having those integrations, but then it's about doing it really well, not just saying we have it and tick a box. It's about having it deeply integrated as much as possible. That's part,
okay,
of our ethos.
Absolutely. So how scalable is your platform? I mean, there's a lot of small, you know, tribal casinos and commercial casinos even in the U.S. that aren't in states that have either legalized sportsbook or iGaming. So can you get them in there with social gaming to start with and then build from there?
Well, we can. You know, ultimately, this is the thing about our platform. We are content agnostic. So mm-hmm. if companies want to come and integrate or they want to utilize, you know, other ways of entering the market, you can. Even some of the sportsbooks we're integrated with offer social versions of themselves, right. for example. So it's very easy for us to take that route. And that's something that we're open to. And from scalability perspective, you know, our first year tagline was performance at scale. That was really important for us, and that we consistently are focusing on high level. I mean, because, you know, casino and sportsbook are two very different beasts in terms of like performance. You know, you can really track and understand, anticipate casino uplifts and downturns, but sportsbook also is very dynamic. It really can peaks and troughs very depending, obviously, naturally with sports events around the world. So you need to make sure that our business is able to perform. And in the scalability perspective is, you know, we know that we need, look, we are here to serve leading operators. So we expect that if we're working with multi-state operators that need to be in a multitude of different states, that we have the ability to deploy. One of the biggest issues that companies do have is they have platforms either in-house that can't really scale so quickly or don't have the ability to be a multi-vertical platform, mm-hmm. meaning they struggle to even serve, you know, they might be really good with their sports book, but might not be very good with their casino, for example, because they haven't got a platform that's developed for that. Or they don't even have, to go back to that, the point is that a lot of companies don't even have the ability to cross-sell properly.
Right.
And then if you're talking about player retention, a company that has a really great way of transitioning between sportsbook and casino, particularly in states like Michigan and Pennsylvania, where these opportunities are there, and it will grow. We don't know when the next iCasino states will go, of course, but when they do go, that's when you're going to want to try and cross-sell very well on the platforms. You'll see very quickly who does well from casino, based probably because they have a good platform.
Right.
And a lot of the time, these companies do not have the time and with the time pressures just to get into new states.
Sure,
these listed businesses, these operators need to see that they're in the market. Now, that doesn't mean they really have time to then go and create or evolve their platforms to be able to be this, you know, this flexible. So definitely very scalable, Roger. And I think it's a key part and a key value driver for us.
Sure, great. So we've really only got six states in the U.S. and a couple in Canada, provinces that offer iGaming, the casino side of this. So what do you think the potential is for the U.S. market and North American market when it comes to online gaming?
Well, I'm sure lots of people know, your listeners will certainly be very much aware of it. But at the moment, we've got all these states that have sportsbook, and one of the best funnels for iCasino is the sportsbook.
Right.
And the iCasino player tends to have a higher amount that you can attach to their lifetime value and spend.
Right.
So if you were actually a regulator, a tax man, whatever you want to call them, you would realistically should be looking at iCasino as an even better driver long-term of tax returns to the state or provinces. Now, obviously, people have their eyes on, does it cannibalize land-based casino stuff? But I think now there is enough evidence out there, mm-hmm. clear reports that show that it doesn't cannibalize land-based casino. And in fact, particularly in times, COVID was a crazy time, right?
When
lots of stuff was closed down. But that really crippled a lot of land-based casinos groups. There's a lot of uncertainty on that. There's always going to be uncertainty. In fact, what iCasino would do is it would actually give an assurances to a lot of these casino groups that they have their multi-channel way of ensuring the growth of their businesses. And also, of course, different demographics just may only want to be involved from a casino perspective. So, and we found that you know, for land-based casinos, because like we work with Desert Diamond in Arizona and the Tohono O'odham Nation,
they,
you know, there is a great way of utilizing mobile to drive engagement even within your land-based casinos. You know, you can reward people. But our platform is very well set up that you can reward people to, you know, not just a gaming bonus. Why not come in and have a food and beverage bonus if you are given something? We can have that kind of integration level within our platform. So I think that it will grow. It might take time. But I think from everyone from the ecosystem of land-based casino operators through to the state really should be aware that casino is a great thing for them. And then for these businesses, because they've got sports books, it's an easy way to drive people through the funnel to casino. And you've got so many land-based casinos with real great databases.
Right.
It's a great thing for everyone all round, but it will take time and it takes education, you know, so.
Sure.
But we're very excited about the long-term progress for that.
Great, great. So you mentioned the regulatory process in the U.S. You know, seems like a lot of European operators were shocked at how intense it is, and they were kind of put off by it. But I mean, your involvement in Canby, you know how strict they are. How are you approaching that now with Strive?
Yeah, I mean that was we have a very very strong vision here of zero compliance issues.
Right.
Fines, warnings. It's like it's on. We actually have it in our boardroom. Like there's no excuse, and everything that you do, whether it's development, whether it's a phone call, whether it's customer support, whether it's app development, everyone has to do it with the understanding that compliance comes first.
Right.
And that's we set up the business with that mindset from the beginning, and that also meant that definitely for my previous employee. And obviously I've been through the process heavily myself, is understanding even from the business structure and the way that you do things, you want to keep it as clean and as simple as possible. And that's kind of why we, you know, we're here in Vancouver, but, you know, we are a UK headquartered business. We're not in any jurisdictions to try and avoid tax or anything like that.
Right.
We're just super clean. And I think that's been appreciated by the regulators. It's hard enough them trying to understand the depths and complexities of iGaming businesses sprawled around the world. We set this business up and run it from that kind of mindset. So I think it's been very good for us. We've been very quick through with regulators thus far, and we have the right advice, the right people around us all the time to help us with when we go to test labs, etc. And obviously we got GLI 33 certified so quickly as well when we first did our launch in Colorado. I think they said it was one of the fastest they've ever done on the platform.
Okay,
so,
great.
So yeah, it's ingrained at Strive.
Yeah, it's got to be, right?
Yeah, yeah, it has to be.
Yeah, indeed. No question. So one of the issues that I've always come up with is the customer service is horrible in most of the sports books and iGaming casinos. I mean, I've gone through, you know, at least half a dozen instances where I didn't get any resolution, and it was kind of like, well, tough luck, you know. How do you handle that? I mean, that's obviously a direct contact with your customer.
Yeah, so we have a managed services team that has customer support, and we have payments, risk and fraud agents. So that's the only time we would have an end user direct experience. At the moment, Desert Diamond take that service from us.
Okay.
The other ones like Golden Nuggets, that's DraftKings, have their own, for example. But what I think that, I mean, you do see a lot of this in customer service agents, but a lot of stuff comes, I think, a lot from the sportsbook at the moment, the kind of decision making and risk mitigations that some of these platforms use.
Right.
I think that what it really comes down to, if it's sportsbook specific here, a lot of it will be down to the risk levels set by the operator. And if not set by the operator, set by the providers or technology stack that they have. And I think that I definitely believe there is more entrants coming into the sportsbook world that potentially are more open to just accepting bets, taking those on, because I know that the problem is if you don't have any legalized or regulated sports books that would just accept all sorts of bets regardless of size, then you're still gonna have somewhere a gray market operating,
sure,
someone that's trying to get their bets on elsewhere. So I think a lot of it is, it will always come down to the sort of the way that the operator wants to run things.
Right.
And obviously I think that's a big thing, and it's still something that needs to be hurdle to be overcome. But as you, I think you've heard other execs come out and talk about their risk appetite or kind of customer that they're seeking.
Right.
And I think that's why it's ripe in the market for more operators to become more. I think there's going to be a maturity in the space now. You know, I think and people need to find their homes. Not everyone can have the same customer target in mind. There's going to be more than that.
Right.
And that's going to be really interesting to see that in the next few years. And then I think that will change the way that people engage with customer service and what they might expect when they're placing bets.
Okay, great, great. So, you know, you're talking to me from Vancouver, which, you know, British Columbia has a pretty mature iGaming market now, but in Ontario, it's not so much. Are you pleased with the way this industry has rolled out since the legalization of sports betting, of full sports betting in Canada?
Well, I mean, to be honest, like mainly the focus has been on obviously completely about in the US.
Right.
I think for me personally, just the decision in Vancouver was a great one, because we wanted to have some, you know, West Coast.
Right.
I certainly wanted to be, you know, make sure that we've got our more, you know, European teams like Malta and UK, but West Coast, that we can cover as much hours as possible. But in terms of, like, I think Ontario is certainly going to wake up a lot of provinces here about assessing what they do next.
Right.
I think it was, you know, for globally, it's a really great opportunity for companies to come in and get an opportunity in the North American market that they otherwise wouldn't have. I think Canada will start to analyze what it's doing in the next few years, and certainly we'll see what's happening in the US. And to be honest, with the US, I remember it in May 2018. I've been super impressed actually by the speed of the rollout of regulations. Obviously, some regulators should probably look at some of their stuff that they have implemented and go, does this tax rate particularly work to actually gain the most? It sounds great to have a high tax in, but it doesn't necessarily produce higher revenues. That's just standard economics. And I think there are ways that things can be adapted. And obviously, I've talked earlier about, I think iCasino, I would have liked to have seen it come quicker, but I understand that people are learning and just seeing it from sportsbook. So I think that's, you know, it's actually been more rapid than I thought to begin with for sports wagering. But now I think there's the next turn is to see regulators maybe adapting some of the stuff they originally came out with. I'd like to see more iCasino, and specifically to Canada. If you're talking about Canada, I think they will look to do something in the next few years.
Sure.
Because of the success we're seeing in the US. And obviously the US has been our main focus with Canada.
Right, right, great. So, you know, responsible gaming is obviously a big issue in all jurisdictions. You know, we've seen some pushback in the UK about it, but do you think the US and Canada have really stayed ahead of that issue at this point?
Well, it's a good question. I feel that it's on us as an industry to try and bring in responsible gambling standards that are higher than anyone's even setting for anything through their regulations. Because if we don't, we will, as we've seen in Europe, be hit by a massive wave of regulations at some point.
Right.
We only have to be at the tip of doing something wrong or someone being really badly impacted by a gambling habit for people to then scrutinize this industry. And that can go to the highest levels, at presidential levels and Senate, if that's not handled correctly now. So I think it's more on us from, there's a lot of knowledge from around the world and a lot of understanding of this, that we should be setting our own higher standards. So it's good to see organizations like the AGA try to bring in standards. It's good to see other groups try and bring this in. And I think that it's just something that I would say to all of us in the industry, that we really have to focus on that. For us, we're in a really great position because of our Infinity Engine to be able to pick up on responsible gaming habits. But you know, everyone needs to be ensure that they're on top of it, because otherwise we could all be very damaged.
So as a platform provider, I'm assuming you'll probably take the lead from your clients and how strict they want that to be.
Well, they of course it is their responsibility, of course. But, you know, I think the best thing is that you can provide tools to people that enable them to have the highest standards.
Sure.
You know, and I think that's the most important as well. And we certainly champion it.
Okay, great. So what about M&A? I mean, would it make sense for Strive to merge with another system provider, or possibly buy a company that could enhance something that you already have? Are you interested in looking into that kind of stuff?
Well, I think naturally, of course, I'm always have my ears on stuff, but for me, it's about, I just want to keep us completely focused on being the platform specialist.
Sure.
Because, you know, from a vision perspective, and just for our own business, like, you know, being platform focused on North America with all the different states, province regulations, it's hard enough just being really good at this.
Right.
And I've seen other businesses, like, there's a reason why there's a lot of platform businesses and other verticals that come in when they're coming from Europe, mm-hmm. or where else, LATAM or Africa into US. And it's like, the reason why they can't break it or succeed is because they say they're interested in North America, but then there's a new regulation that happens, or suddenly everyone needs to get to Brazil really quickly, right. Or everyone's like, and you know, for developers, that's madness. You know, and product people, like, you can't run a business like that very effectively, particularly at our scale of business. So at the moment, it's complete and utter focus on platform. I think actually M&A is not going to be very important for us at this particular time. It's about building ourselves out and continue. We want to be number one in North America in terms of platform. We're very close to it. I just want to secure that position. And then that's more, from that position, you're a much better platform to look out and see what you should be doing next.
Okay.
Certainly not on our radar at the moment.
Great. Just one more question. Where would you like to see Strive in the next 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, so as I say, I think we're not far from it, but I want everyone to realize that we are number one, and to define what number one means is, you know, a certain level of market share of serving customers across the US and Canada that would entail people to go, okay, that platform actually does what it says. It sounds like so basic to say it, right? And there's probably much better marketing language to use out there. But it's about utilizing something that stays up with uptime, that can scale, that can be deployed quickly into new markets, does allow people to integrate lots of great content, has lots of automation to enable people to be to engage with their customers really well. And just be, you know, people go, do you know what? I'd like people to just look at where we are at number one and go, they're a really good platform, you know, and it really makes really great partner for us. I just want that kind of feeling of really good customer satisfaction. That's where I'd like us to be in that period of time.
Great. Sounds like you just got to fulfill your promises.
What else does a business need to do?
That's
if you do that, then everyone, you're great, more business for yourself.
Yeah, excellent. Well, Max, thanks for taking the time to join us today. It was really interesting to hear about Strive, and good luck as you go forward. You know, there's so much opportunity in this country and in this region. I think Strive is really well positioned for that.
Well, thank you for having me on, which has really been great.
Okay, hope to see you at G2E then.
Absolutely. See you there.